Hello and welcome to the MIT Press Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Gondek. And today I'm speaking with Padma Desai about her new book, Breaking Out, An Indian Woman's American Journey. Padma Desai is Gladys and Roland Harriman Professor of Comparative Economic Systems and Director for the Center of Transition Economies at Columbia University. Padma Desai, thanks for taking time to talk to the MIT Press Podcast today.
Pleasure is mine.
Breaking Out is a memoir of your life, from your youth in India to adulthood in the United States. Your description of your youth initially struck me as a story of a very different time. So could you describe what life was like for you as a girl?
I think I really had a very sheltered, protective upbringing in India. My father had a BA degree from Cambridge, England, in English literature. He taught Shakespeare and the English romantic poets in the college, but he was quite conservative in the sense that we three girls should be brought up in a very protective environment. Of course, we should get our education, so if a calamity befell us, we could, live on our own. But that was it. I was trying to reach out for the stars and wanted to go to Harvard before I could spell Harvard. And, really go to America. And his was a very limited agenda for me. At the same time, he was a social reformer. He campaigned against bride burning and dowry payment from the bride's family to the bridegroom's family, which was prevalent in my subcaste. So he was a reformer, but as a father, he was extremely protective and wanted a limited agenda for me. Mother was, of course, bright, very strong-willed, formidable imagination, but she had a bipolar mood problem, which I understood long after I had left home. And she knew no English, whereas father taught Shakespeare in the college. But she was very bright, and he really loved her and looked after her. But mother's neurotic problem did create a certain sort of deprivation in me that, I thought, did mother ever hug me, hold me? I didn't feel that way about her. So the upbringing was sort of one step forward, two steps backward, as it were. But I had a lot of nourishment from my two siblings, my little sister and my brother, a little older than me. And we played cricket with a tennis ball, which bounced a lot. And we flew kites from the terrace. And so we had quite a bit of fun that way.
Your father was devoted, almost to the point of selflessness, to education.
Yes, he was. And he developed the curriculum in the college where he taught for almost 4 decades. He also took active interest in developing the school system in the provincial town in which I grew up. He established a couple of colleges in small cities in Gujarat state. So he was, and he campaigned for the abolition of dowry, for the spread of education for girls. So he was very forward looking, but at the same time he was totally lacking in ambition. With a Cambridge University degree in those days, 1925, 1927, he could have advanced so much in India of those days, but he didn't. He just wanted to remain in the provincial town, develop the college, teach students, and look after the family.
He must have been of two minds regarding your academic record. On the one hand, very proud of your accomplishments. On the other, wary of what could become of you as you continued your education.
Oh, yes, he was. He was worried about me. I mentioned a brilliant achievement in my high school days when I sort of got a second rank among 48,000 candidates from the entire state of Bombay in my matriculation examination. And father, he remarked, "You are wearing a crown of thorns." And it, to me, it didn't seem like a put-down comment, but I think he was very protective about me, and he felt that this achievement is going to sort of make me strive for more and more, which I did. In my BA examination, I topped the list of candidates of the university in economics, and then finally I got the fellowship to go to America in 1955, and I ended up at Harvard. So, but by that time, I had a disastrous first marriage, so it was not in my father's charge to let me go to America, because I was a married woman, so I could leave India and discover America.
We've talked about your parents, but you dedicated the book to a woman named Khaki and devoted an entire chapter to her. Who was Khaki, and what was her influence on you?
Oh, Khaki was God's angel in my life. Khaki was my father's brother's widow. So she was my aunt, paternal aunt, as it were. And she became, I think, a widow when she was probably in her middle teens. And when father came back from England in 1927, she must have been in her mid-20s, and he brought her from the village to stay with us. And Khaki was the one who provided us with the nurturing, with the spoiling. She used to make hot snacks for us. She made sure that we got our lunch on time before we rushed out to school. And but she also had, you know, certain rules to follow. I mean, she was a widow and her head was shaved. And as a child, I grew up watching the barber come and shave her head every now and then. And in those days, probably I looked at it but didn't worry about it. But now, and living in America, and I sort of thought, what a horrible thing. But I also sort of felt that Khaki herself wanted that and follow certain strict rules. So it was the culture and the norms of the culture to which she had to submit, and the family, my parents also had to submit. But she was the nurturer. She was the one who gave me the precious gift of forming close ties with my friends, with my family, of deepening those ties. And, you know, if I have problems with my friends, I must repair my ties generously. You know, I really learned to manage my personal relations around me by really adopting her very general, gentle, negotiating manner. I really missed her, I was so happy that I dedicated the book to her memory.
You mentioned Harvard in an earlier answer. You must have been quite an exotic presence in Harvard Square during your graduate studies in the 50s, and Cambridge must have seemed like another planet to you. What were some of the most memorable moments of culture shock from back then?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. You know, it was sort of a process of discovery, which was amazing. It was sort of exhilarating, energizing, liberating. Those 4 years at Harvard from 1955 to 59, I discovered nature, which was so different. The trees, I grew up with mango and guava and coconut trees, and here were, you know, alder and aspen and poplar and birch, and I just and then the fall, the burst of fall colors in their collective glory. I just would step aside and look at the fall leaves, and then of course discovering the sense of humor of my American classmates. You know, we had these three GI guys from the military who were in the political science economics department, and they would sit around me in Litauer library, and then they would start talking with me, chit-chat about this and that, and finally one of them would say, "What are you doing here? You should be in Hollywood." I mean, that would have been a very, very improper comment in these days, but 55 years ago, who sort of worried? And, you know, I was as fascinated by them as they were by me, because I had not seen blonde haired, blue eyed men in my life. So you can imagine that the attraction was sort of mutual. And then the children in Cambridge Commons, they had never seen a sari-clad woman with a red dot on her forehead. So they would run after me, calling me gypsy woman, gypsy woman. And then I stopped and I said, "Can I ride your bicycle?" And they were so amazed that a woman wearing a sari could ride a bicycle. And then I remember those truck drivers shouting at me, "Lady, your slip is showing." What did that mean in those days? I mean, did that mean that my sari didn't go down long enough to touch the bottom so that my slip was showing? It was just discovery after discovery. But I did well. I scored quite a few A grades through my career. Continued getting fellowships, became a teaching fellow, and the photographers descended and said, I think it was the United States Information Agency which sent photographers to take my picture. Teaching four Harvard College students of the class of 1960, and I tracked down three of them, and I am in touch with them after 55 years.
So finally, when people read the book, they will learn all about the struggle with your first marriage, and then your eventual return to the U.S. You ended up with a loving husband, the economist Jagdish Bhagwati, an accomplished and very adventurous daughter, Anuradha, and a successful career. So I guess I should ask, are you satisfied with how everything turned out?
Absolutely. Totally. Personally and professionally, very fulfilled. Jagdish, I met him for the first time in 1956 when I was at Harvard and he was a graduate student at MIT for a year. And he was just visiting the International Students Association, and I was serving chicken curry, and I was also beautiful, so he instantly fell in love with me. We go a long way back. It's a very close relationship. We are both extremely engaged in our scholarly pursuits, but having written a joint book with him on India, Planning for Industrialization, which was published in 1968, and which became a bestseller, we argued for market reforms and against Nehru's socialist policies. So it was quite an achievement, but I didn't want to be a subsidiary author under his brilliant leadership. So I chose to get into the Soviet field. 1968, we came back to America. I was at the Harvard Russian Research Center, a wonderful group of scholars at Harvard. And I published several articles, several books. Then Mikhail Gorbachev happened, 1985 in the Soviet Union, and my life went into a very exciting orbit. I was much in demand, TV, the news media, because I was one of the few scholars who studied the Soviet economy, and then, of course, Boris Yeltsin, and now Vladimir Putin. So professionally, it has been a very fulfilling, rewarding life. And personally, of course, my husband and my daughter have given me total bliss.
Padma Desai, the author of Breaking Out, An Indian Woman's American Journey. Thanks for being on the MIT Press podcast today.
Thank you very much, Chris.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at mitpress.mit.edu. Don't forget, you can find the MIT Press on Facebook, www.facebook.com/MIT Press. And you can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at MIT Press. Thanks for listening to this episode of the MIT Press podcast. Copyright 2013, the MIT Press. All rights reserved.